Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night, back in the saddle here on a Friday on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and always streaming on the 101.3 ESPN app. Yesterday was a great day. Happy to be back in Oswego, but happier to be back here as well with all of you. Happy that Jason's here. I love when Jason's here. Number one, there's a couple different reasons why I love when Jason's here, and I might make him blush when I say this, but Jason works very hard, and he really wants to be in this business, and he's always willing to come in and help out and be around, and I love when he's able to do that because I know that, you know, he's making the right steps forward in his career. Two, I love that when he's here, we can take phone calls because it's not just me here. And three, when you are running the board, I get to sit in the more comfortable chair.
Yeah, and you get to focus on just talking. Now, I know you're a guy that can multitask, but it's a lot easier to worry about just talking.
Well, that, you know, it's, look, I yes, but I don't have, you know, I don't need sympathy on, oh, read the text, press
no,
the button.
No, like, no, I'm not giving you sympathy. I'm just saying, you know, you can kick back, relax a little bit, and apparently the comfier chair.
Yes, this chair is much comfier. The thing is, because I can also put Rich's chair here and have my feet up on it. But it was fun in Oswego as well. Really good time. Now, Jason, have you been back to Ithaca since you graduated?
No. I'm probably going to go back, but probably during the summer. The cold months are coming up. I don't think so. But did you feel old going back?
No. I felt right at home. It felt like I just left, honestly. Now, I was a little bit older than a couple of the other alumni they invited back. There was a good mix, so I was older than a few of them. So I felt compared to them. But compared to the student body as a whole, I'm like, that guy's going through the campus center wearing a backwards hat, big headphones, and baggy sweatpants. Like, that's exactly how I looked, and I could see myself doing that. Again, like, this person's probably hungover, and like that at one point could have been me too. At one point was me at some point.
Yep, me too.
So it didn't feel like that. Here's the only regret I had. So they gave us a really good lunch. Really good lunch. But it was chicken patty day at the dorm food.
Yeah.
They could have given me chicken patties and I would have been pumped. Like, I wanted, if I'm going to get the nostalgia, I want all of the nostalgia.
Chicken patties were one of the sole reasons why I gained about 30 pounds in college. And then I was talking to our Sports Saturday board up, Dave Hunter, who also went to Ithaca College, was telling me he would steal chicken patties and throw them out the window.
That, because in that cold weather, you're talking about, they're like hockey pucks. So they just become, you know, just projectiles to get people at the dorms.
But I love chicken patties. I really do.
My three favorite things to get in college at lunch, well, actually four. If these four things were on the menu, I was like, okay, good day, here we go. Who's going to lunch twice? Lunch opens at 11. Who's going at 11? Lunch closes at 2. Who's going at 2? Who's going at 1:50? And we're going again. Chicken patty day, popcorn chicken day with the sweet and sour sauce. Every Sunday or every other Sunday was grilled steaks. Mm. And they were really, really well done because the school doesn't want you to get sick, right? They'd much rather be overcooked than undercooked. It was probably like having shoe leather. And I just doused it in A1 sauce, and I loved it. It was a delicacy to me. Like, and still to this day, I love A1 sauce. Like, I'll be at home hanging out in Albany with my college friends, and my buddy Justin will see me have a steak, and I go, hey, you want any steak with that A1 sauce? And I'll be hanging out here, and we'll make steak, and Jess will be like, I can't see the steak. Where exactly is it? Is it buried under the A1 sauce? So that's just a habit that I got into because you needed the A1 sauce to get some flavor in the shoe-like steak. also, meatball sub day. But meatball sub day and chicken patty day were usually crossovers. It was the same. So like that was like full pig-out day for me.
Every day was full pig-out day for me. Sophomore year, I had the unlimited meal plan. That didn't go well.
I had the unlimited meal plan every year.
Yeah, but you know I could eat them out of business.
You probably could. Now, did you only have one dining hall at Ithaca?
We had three.
Yeah, we had like six, and they all had their own specialty. One had an ice cream bar. One had personal pizzas. One had a stir-fry bar. One had a grill. One had a pizza, like a full-size pizza, so you just pizza by the slice. Oh, it was great. I loved it. So,
did you find that the pizza in Central New York was good? Because I didn't think it was.
I mean, pizza's pizza, right? Like,
well, there's. I'm not saying I wouldn't eat it. I'm just saying there's better pizza, you know,
as long
down
as
where I'm from.
As long as it's... Don't be an elitist. Just, oh, you're like Arnie. Oh, just because I'm from Westchester and downstate means the pizza... Don't be an elitist. You're better than that.
Listen, the pizza wasn't as good. I never said I didn't eat it. Dollar slices at Rogan's? Oh, man.
So, you know, what you need is Zonies. Now, for those of you who don't know what Zonies is a calzone place that's good... All the time.
Do you know DP Dough?
Yes, I know DP Dough.
There you go.
But see, you and I are having a conversation right now. Our listeners don't know what DP Dough is. Our listeners don't know what Zonies is or Cam's Pizza in Oswego. But how about this? College food is great. And here.
College is great. Don't ever leave. That should have been your closing remark.
I know that I'm not a personal advertiser, but it's just to bring it back here. If you went to school locally and you went to UVM, Country Cart Deli, RJ's, Manhattan Pizza, Ali Kebabs, the food carts on Church Street. I love them all. Like, that's the kind of places that we're talking about. It is Champlain Valley Game Night. I do need some advice from all the listeners, though. If you want to get on the text line, please, I need your help. Those of you who are, in some cases, older than me, in some cases, have been through this before, even if you're younger than me and you've been through this. So last night, I was in Oswego. And as for what's coming up sports-wise today, look, we have a lot. We'll talk about Joe Girardi. We'll talk about the Pats. We'll get batting practice. All that's coming up. But I need your help first. So I'm in Oswego last night, and on my way out of town, I stop at the Oswego sub shop, and my best friend had been working in Syracuse for the day. We're like 45 minutes away, and he came up to see me for a little bit. We had dinner together at the sub shop. Now, his wedding is next July, and I am his best man. So, in my mind, I've started thinking about the best man speech already. I'm, 9 months away, so I got time. I need help from all of you. Number one, at what point do I need to have the best man speech, like, fully thought out? Do I need to have it done just the night before? Do I need to have it, like, 6 months in advance and practice it a million times? What's the best course of action on the best man speech? That's question number one. Question two is length. Does this need to be 2.5 minutes and everyone just wants to keep drinking after that? Does it need to be 10 minutes because, like, I'm the best man? It needs to be thoughtful. Like, this is my best friend growing up. Other questions I have. What's the tone? Do I need to be funny? Do I need to bring up the past? Do I need to be like if I make a joke about, like, his lack of success with other women in the past, would that make the wife mad? Or, like, well, hey, if you had seen Sam with that, you know, if you'd seen his luck in high school, we're all amazed he got to this point. Like, should I make a joke like that, or would that offend her?
No, that one's pretty good.
That one's good. Okay. Also, should I be sappy in the best man speech? Like, Jason, you've got the clip there. Remember in Wedding Crashers? Remember Wedding Crashers when I forget his name, but he's famous. He's very famous. But he's making the speech at the wedding.
Is it Owen Wilson?
No, it's not Owen Wilson. Do you have the cut?
Yeah.
So maybe should I make a speech like this?
After my ninth stint in rehab, Craig was the only one who still believed in me. Been sober now for 8 months. And I thank God every day for sending me a friend like Craig. I love you, man.
So I've never been in rehab, but should I go with something sappy? Do I want to tug at the heartstrings? How do I want to do this best man speech? And again, how much do I talk about the fiance or the wife in this case? Am I going to, does she a big part of my speech? Like, hey, we took care of him for 20 years and now we're passing him on to you and we couldn't be happier for that, you know? We're so happy to bring you into our social group and have you be here forever. Or do I ignore her because, like, she's not my best friend?
My question is, do you already have some thoughts on this and you're just trying to figure out, like, is what I'm thinking normal or you're just that confused?
No, I mean, I have thoughts. And Jason, you can close the text line on your computer because when you have the text line up, it's going to get whenever we get text, it's going to beep through like it just did. So you can turn it off. So Big Dave says the day before has worked well for me. 3 minutes and be funny as hell. That's what Big Dave says. Doug in Hinesburg says stay away from the past. That's what my best man did. It was not good. So now I'm thinking I shouldn't make jokes about the past. Like, I really wanted, part of me wants to go with, like, you know, like I just said, hey, If you'd seen the trouble we had growing up getting girls, I'm amazed we got to this point. Ha ha ha. Like that. Like I thought maybe that was a decent one-liner, but now I want to stay away from that.
I think that one's good. I like that. And, so, and I think there's a lot of truth to it.
Well, for both of us, yes. Yep. But do I talk about the family? Is family at all? Does the family come into it? I don't know. They're not overly religious, so this is not going to be like a super... Well, her family's religious. He's not. So I don't know.
But you're not her best man.
That's true. That's true. I'm not. Now, here's the other one. Now, obviously, there's alcohol at weddings.
Yes.
I am not a person who likes to talk, work, do anything, even after one beer. Now, because I talk for a living, I like to think I won't be nervous. I like to think I won't be nervous doing the speech. So I'm thinking to myself, look, I'm going to keep all my facilities about me, no alcohol, go into the speech completely, you know, completely 100%. Some people are like, yeah, you got to do that because you want to make sure you say the right things. Other people are like, look, you got to get a little lubed up to get over the nerves. I like to think I'm not doing the nerves thing, but I don't know. Wait, let's see. Cody in St. Albans. Be funny, tell them a story, and add both your best friend and his wife, and just be honest, be happy, have a good time, just be yourself. Now, that's real. Now, that sounds like what my dad would say to me. So, Cody, thank you. That sounds like dad-like advice. So I'm trying to figure out how the speech should go, and if you have any more ideas, continue to send them in, 802-655-6672. Again, the wedding's not until late July. So, I mean, I have 10 months here to figure this thing out.
With my vast 0 years of experience, I think if the speech is over 3 minutes, you're going to start boring people. You got to get to the point. Word economy.
Yeah, get to the point. Get to the point. And look, I mean, it's open bar all night, but the wedding, the reception, I mean, it has a time stamp on it. So we got to get people back to the food and drinks. I mean, that's absolutely for sure. Cody in St. Albans says he is a father, but his daughter's only 1 year old. So he is a dad. That is good dad-like advice. So I don't know. I was thinking, I've got the close. Like, I've got the last line. Like, the last line I know. It's the 2 minutes and 45 seconds leading up to that. That if I'm going to stay at 3 minutes, like, that's what I'm trying to work on and try to figure out the tone.
Is it, no, but seriously, he's a great guy and we're so happy that they have each other?
No, but he might be listening now. I told him I was going to do this, so if he's listening, I can't give it away here. Right. Here's the other thing. Should I take it as an opportunity to help the station? No, I'm serious. Should I put my best man speech on Facebook Live and say, hey, we're here at the Rosenzweig Flynn wedding, and we're streaming on Facebook Live, and we'd like to welcome our viewers and our fans at 101.3 ESPN in Burlington, Plattsburgh. Shout out, you guys. And then do the speech. Should I use it as a branding opportunity? Should I say something along the lines of, like, well, I'm a radio host. I talk every day, so this should be easy. Ba-da-da-boom. I don't know.
No,
I'm not going to use that. No, that's terrible. But
no, don't make it about yourself. But give out station T-shirts in the gift bags.
So, Chris and Virgence, your joke is good, and you're there for the groom, so your speech should honor him and make him feel good. So he likes the joke. Donald in Georgia says, do not use it as a chance for self promotion. If I put the speech on Facebook Live. For our listeners, would people be interested in that? Now, Facebook Live lives forever. I don't expect you to stay on Saturday night in to watch my speech, but if it was up, would you be interested? Like, would you be interested in what my 3-minute speech was?
I would have loved to have seen your speech yesterday. I'd watch you anytime.
Well, thank you. Another guy says no. So people are not liking that. What if I had a video component? Like, what if I really brought the house down and, like, I had a PowerPoint and we had, like, a giant drop-down board and I've got pictures there of, like, us when we were 9 and 12 and 15 through the years and, like, man, here we are today. Like,
you should get, like, a really serious voice to narrate it and then just have Arnie say stuff when it's supposed to be funny.
Should I do it now? Should I get the DJ involved? Like, should I get the DJ involved? We get a beat to it. I don't even, like, now I'm.
Can you rap?
Not really. Oh. Now I'm spitballing off the top of my head, but really, I'm thinking a little bit funny. I've got a good close that I know is a strong close. I've thought about the close since the minute he asked me to be the best man. I've got that completely in the bag, and she's going to like it also. So I know that's going to be good. Doug and Heinsberg again. Joking about the past and making her laugh is great. A serious past is not a good idea. Well, you know, I'm not going to go and talk about, I mean, not that he and I don't have dark past, but if we did, no, I'm not going to bring that up. Arnie's wife goes, Beth texted, and she goes, do not make the bride mad. If you do, you will no longer be able to be his friend. That's
the valid point.
Now, she's awesome, though. She's awesome. Jeannie is awesome, and I don't think she would do that to me. And I would certainly, because she's awesome, I have nothing to say that's going to tick her off. I'm not going to like mention ex-girlfriends by name. Like, what do you think I am here, people?
Are we taking rough draft submissions at Brady@1013ESPN.com?
If you have been a best man before and you have your speech, you can send it in to me, Brady@1013ESPN.com. That's a good idea. If you have a rough draft, maybe I can take like a little bit of everything. But Facebook Live, that was actually something. He actually told me, yeah, you should put it on Facebook Live. Should I do it in a 101.3 ESPN t-shirt over the tux?
No.
What if I wouldn't do that either. I'm just kidding. What if I gave Al 101.3 ESPN bumper stickers at the wedding and made it part of the party favors?
No, I like that, but I want people to get t-shirts.
T-shirts for 160 people, though. Bumper stickers are a lot easier.
I'm an idea man. I don't deal with small details.
All right. Look, I am usually the one telling Rich and Arnie, we've got to get to sports. We've got to get to sports. We've got to get to sports. I spent 18 minutes on Oswego and best man ideas. But you all have been great. Mike in the man cave, give him a round of Washington apples and go from there. I don't even know what that means.
I don't know what that means either.
So Washington apples and a 101.3 bumper sticker, that's the gift bag. The best man doesn't need to give a gift bag.
No. But you need to give a good gift.
Also, serious question. This one is for serious. I'm the best man. How expensive does my gift have to be to the couple? Seriously. Usually, I think like within $100, like around $100 or less is usually a respected number for people who are really good friends. Like, I've been at weddings where it's like a $25 gift card, but like you're not that close. If it's $100, do I need to way exceed that because I'm the best man? Do I under exceed that because, hey, I'm spending money helping out with the bachelor party, I'm doing some of the legwork with him, I'm in the wedding party, so I'm renting or buying the suit and tux, like whatever. What about the monetary value of the gift?
I'm going to go with about $150.
$150. Someone says this is boring. So when we come back, we'll talk about Joe Girardi, 101.3 ESPN.
Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
I like the confused look.
Mixtapes.org.
Because this is A1 Everything by Meek Mill.
I don't know what that means.
You like A1 sauce. So the song is A1 Everything.
I do like A1 sauce, but I was like, where's my Kanye music?
It goes away.
You took it out.
I did.
Wow, you snuck up on me without telling me there.
Well, I don't know if you would have liked it, so.
So you just did it. Well, yeah. Hey, better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Yes.
Right? So that's fine. Hey, all good. I just was a little thrown off. I like it, though. I do, and I do love A1 sauce. Thank you for all the help on the best man stuff, except for the one guy who said it was boring. Well, now we'll go back to what it, and you know what? Usually I'm with that guy. Usually I'm like, hey, I came to you for sports, but I needed your help, and you guys gave it to me, and I got 15 texts talking about how to do the speech, and only one saying it was boring, so I'm going to consider it a win. We want to get to sports here. Let's go to sports. The Yankees let go of Joe Girardi yesterday. You know, I you can quibble at semantics. I don't think he was fired. His contract wasn't renewed. Obviously, they still got rid of him. They still let go of him. They still didn't want him back, but I don't think he was fired per se. Based on performance, it was a massive mistake, and I've said this until I'm blue in the face, and I totally believe it. He has achieved so much with this organization in the face of just insurmountable scrutiny. The things he's had to overcome, the things he's had to deal with in this franchise over the last 10 years have been things unlike any other. He deserved his job based on performance. And then, like, I can't take credit for this parallel. I saw this yesterday, and I started thinking, wow, this is right. The Yankees have been here before. The Yankees have done this before. In 1995, after 1995, the Yankees fired Buck Showalter. And Buck Showalter was coming off three consecutive winning seasons. Now, the strike-shortened season in 94, the strike-shortened season in 95, they weren't full games, but or full seasons. But the Yankees you know, there were 30 games over 500 in 94, and they had a great year in 95 also, and they ended up losing to my Mariners 3-2 in the division series, in which they blew a 2-0 lead. I don't know that that's Buck Showalter's fault, but nonetheless, the team's coming off three straight winning seasons, and the Yankees of the 80s weren't all that great. I mean, to be back in contention in the early and mid-90s was a big deal for the Yankees. Yankees of the 70s, great, Reggie Jackson. Yankees of the 80s, I mean, they weren't irrelevant.
People were Met fans in the 80s.
Yeah, right. They weren't irrelevant, but you're right. The Mets were, you know, the Mets were a big draw in New York, and the Mets were better than the Yankees in the 80s. So Buck Showalter lost his job, and I bet a lot of people felt for Buck Showalter like I feel today for Joe Girardi. And that's just, I feel bad for him, because Buck Showalter rebuilds that thing in New York, gets them to a point where they're right on the edge of winning, and then he gets canned, and then the 90s Yankees are born, and Joe Torre gets all the credit for it, and Buck Showalter's the guy left holding his hat saying, hey, remember that I was here. No one's going to predict that this group of young Yankees is going to become that group of young Yankees. You're irresponsible to say they're going to get to five World Series in 6 years and win, you know, four titles in 5 years, whatever the numbers were. I mean, they won in 96, they won in 97, or what, 96, 98, 99, and 2000.
And 2009.
So, right. So, but they win four out of five World Series. I mean, you're irresponsible to say that that's going to happen. But this group of young Yankees is special. I think we understand that. Aaron Judge, Clint Frazier, Gleyber Torres coming up, Didi Gregorius, Luis Severino. There's real potential here that this team gets really good and stays really good for a decade. And Joe Girardi is going to get lost in this shuffle. And what he did in helping rebuild this team over the failed contracts and the aging contracts of the Brian McCanns and the Mark Teixeiras. And
dealing with the whole A-Rod saga.
And A.J. Burnett. He's dealt with everything. I mean, he's rebuilt this thing, and he kept them competitive, kept them motivated, and kept them playing near or in October nearly every single year. And Buck Showalter lost his job, and Joe Girardi lost his job. And if you're a Yankee fan, it's the grass isn't always greener. If it becomes like it did when Joe Torre was there, then sure, people say, yeah, they made the right decision, and that guy helped them get over the hump. And maybe that will be true. But don't forget what Joe Girardi did in New York.
And I have two questions here. One, isn't the narrative wrong? Shouldn't Joe Girardi, at the very least, have gotten to say that he didn't want to come back versus the Yankees saying they didn't renew his contract? Didn't he deserve that right after 10 years? And after 10 years, isn't it kind of like he's doing a great job, he should deserve to stay? Is there something we're missing here?
Well, what we're missing is that people have said that Girardi, he's too uptight, basically. He's too uptight, and maybe that works with a young team in some way, or with an older team in some ways, because Dustin Pedroia is uptight. David Price is uptight. Chris Sale is uptight in some ways. This fun-loving group of young Yankees, they might not need that guy. So I can understand the change in direction. I can understand the change in voice. I'm just saying, don't sandbag Joe Girardi at every turn and tell me how awful he was, because he wasn't. And I feel bad that if this team is going to go on a historic run, that he's not going to be a part of it, and he's not going to get the credit. And I feel bad for him. And I wish it had come down to, again, his contract was up. It could have easily been put out there as Joe Girardi doesn't want to come back. And I think people would have respected that. People see how fried he is, how much he gave to the game. I feel bad for Girardi. If you're a Yankee fan, I hope you get what you want. I hope you get the guy you want then, because there's no lock, stock, and barrel home run candidates out there anymore. If Alex Cora was the one, he's gone now. So I hope you have somebody in mind. Maybe it's Robbie Thompson, the bench coach. Maybe it's a former player. I don't even know at this point. But I hope you get what you want. I hope that guy is someone who's an effective communicator with young players, who can be loose and laid back, but also get the respect of veterans in that clubhouse and young players alike. I hope it's somebody who can be sabermetrically inclined. I hope you get what you want. I don't know that guy's out there. I'm sure he is somewhere. But don't forget what Joe Girardi did. It's Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. As far as the Red Sox, real quick, on their staff, they need to replace Carl Willis, and just spend a minute on this. Carl Willis, the pitching coach of the Red Sox, he's gone back to the Cleveland Indians where he was. I think this is a big move for the Red Sox, actually. I think this is a huge need for the Red Sox, is getting a pitching coach in here who can who can do great things. Because you have a manager now in Alex Cora who's a first-time manager. He's going to need a strong-minded, strong-willed support staff around him to succeed. I think Cora is the right man for the job, but he's going to need the right pieces around him. And especially in the pitching department, because he was an infielder. He hasn't dealt with pitchers. He doesn't know the way pitchers think. He's going to need a pitching coach that can really get that room and can be a teacher, can be a good relayer of information on both sides. Because Cora is not going to know perfectly how to talk to pitchers. Pitchers aren't perfectly going to know how to talk to Cora. This pitching coach is going to have to be the perfect go-between. And that is a huge thing.
He has two immediate jobs in my mind, and one of the jobs is the same as Alex Cora. He's got to communicate, and he's got to figure out what's going on with David Price and what's going on with Rick Porcello.
He needs to get with Price and just get his attitude cleared up. These guys need to know that you can teach them something. These players want to be coached. They want to be taught, and they want to be gotten the best. They want the best gotten out of them. And they're at different stages in their career. For Steven Wright, he wants to know how to stay healthy. For Eduardo Rodriguez, he wants to know how to stay healthy and how to develop a third pitch and be an effective major league starter who can be reliable. Chris Sale wants to know, how can I not fold in the second half? David Price wants to know, how can I stay healthy and be dominant again? They're all at different points, and he's got to be able to have an answer for all of those things. The pitching coach, I think, in this scenario, is the most important, is a huge piece here. If this manager was like Farrell, if this manager for the Red Sox was a pitching guy, I would say the hitting coach was super important. Because the manager is a position player, I would say that the pitching coach is massively important. It's much like in football. If I tell you my head coach is a defensive guy, then my offensive coordinator better be a guru.
A lot of times if your head coach is a defensive guy, he doesn't end up to be that good of a head coach.
That is more of the way of thinking now because the league has trended more offense happy. Bill Belichick was a defensive coach. He's pretty good. Pete Carroll was a defensive coach. He's pretty good. Brian Billick was a defensive coach. He was pretty good. But if we're talking about right now, the trend has been that defensive coaches haven't been as successful as offensive coaches. But my point is, if I tell you if Josh McDaniels leaves the Patriots and becomes a head coach somewhere, he's going to need a defensive coordinator who really knows what he's doing. It's the exact same reason why Sean McVay in Los Angeles took Wade Phillips with him. He took Wade Phillips because he knows he needs Wade Phillips' defensive expertise to match his offensive expertise, because you have a specialty. And Carl Willis, I can't tell you that he was a great pitching coach. I wasn't in the room. I can tell you that bullpen had the second best ERA in baseball this year, the best ERA in baseball. I can tell you that those starters, even as beaten down as they were physically, had pretty good years. You know, had a pretty good overall year outside of Porcello. They did pretty well in the starting rotation. They did great in the bullpen. Carl Willis is a part of that. Whether he's responsible for all of it, I can't tell you. But the team needs to make sure that when they hire a pitching coach, it's someone that the pitchers are going to trust, because it is going to be important. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Look, we usually do batting practice in this segment. I do want to get to batting practice. We will push it into the next segment because I want to spend an appropriate amount of time on it. Danny Amendola is dealing with an injured knee, and he's going to play this weekend for the Pats against the Chargers. He's dealing with a hyperextended knee, and he injured it last week, returning a punt in that Patriots win against Atlanta. This is why I don't want to see players for the Patriots returning punts. Like, I understand you have 53 players on the roster, so there are no throwaway players. If they're there, they're important. I don't want to see any of those players get hurt. But Amendola is so valuable because they're so thin at receiver, and I know you're going to get Malcolm Mitchell back, you hope, here at some point in the next few weeks, but you're so thin at receiver, and Amendola helps open up things for you over the top for Brandon Cooks because of what he does underneath, and he's a security blanket on third down and on second and short and on fourth and goal if it was. He's a security blanket and a trust factor for Tom Brady. I don't want that guy getting hurt. I don't want any of my players getting hurt, but I'd rather put Rex Burkhead or Matthew Slater there or something. I don't care. Just go right there and fair catch the ball every time if you have to. I don't want to see Amendola he missed a game already because of a concussion, suffered returning a punt in game one. I need him on the field.
And it's not the only case you can point to, but they lost Julian Edelman because he was back there returning too.
Well, not this year they didn't. This year he was injured. He he caught a pass, ran down the sideline, made a cut, and his knee buckled. But he
wasn't it a couple of years ago?
Oh, a couple of years. Yeah, not this year. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So I mean, players get injured on punts all the time, and I don't want to see. I'm not going to call Amendola a star, but I don't want to see my vitally important pieces injured returning punts. And Bill Belichick thinks differently than I, so I'll trend my trust in his direction because of his resume over mine. But he really values the punt return game. He doesn't look at it as a throwaway position or just, hey, let's put somebody back there. Because you put Brandon Bolden back there for all I care. He's a running back, and yeah, he's your fifth one, and go back there and see what happens. You get 2 yards, great. You get 20, great. Just hold on the ball and don't get hurt. But Bill Belichick looks at the punt and kickoff return men as vital positions when you talk about flipping field position, talk about gaining field position, talk about setting up your offense. And he's certainly not wrong in that. I just don't want to see Danny Amendola, a guy with a real history of injury concerns, groin, leg, foot last year, I think, head. There's a lot of things piling up there, and I don't need him taking more, you know, possibly unnecessary hits. All right, when we come back, we'll get to the best sound bites in sports, who's saying what, what's going on, batting practice, and also Dustin Pedroia. Can we find a way to spin this to say that him being out for 7 months is potentially a good thing for the Red Sox? I think we can. That's next on 101.3 ESPN.
Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody. All right, everybody. Final segment right here on Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and the 101.3 ESPN app. We go up until 7 o'clock, and then we bring you Dodgers at Astros Game 3. Really excited. I'm really excited for this matchup because of the pitching matchup. I just find it absolutely fascinating. Lance McCullers is 13-4 in his career at Minute Maid Park. Yu Darvish has the lowest ERA against Houston in that ballpark of any visiting ballpark, I think, that he's ever played in. I mean, I think he's 4-1 in the ERA of just over 2 in that ballpark. I think it's fascinating because Houston has a ton of right-handed power hitters. Darvish is obviously right-handed, so everything's going to move away from those righties. How can they stay on the ball, drive it the other way, drive it to the gap in right center? The offense for Houston got going in game 2. I would say the pressure is on the Dodgers now because they didn't hold serve at home. They need to try to hold serve now. So let's get to some of the best audio, though, of the day. Best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what? What's going on? Batting practice.
Champlain Valley Game Night. Batting practice.
Batting practice here on a Friday. Hard to believe we're just a few days away from Halloween. Jason, are you into Halloween?
Absolutely not, but I'm going to try to do something because I'm usually a curmudgeon, so I need to do something.
So, are you going to try to dress up as something?
Yeah, I have my costume from last year when I didn't go to a party.
And what is that?
I can't tell you. What if I see you? It'd be a surprise.
You know, I really wanted to. So, I went as Steve Bartman every year for like 4 years. Every year for like 4 years. So, I went as Bartman. You know what I really wanted to be? And because we're not going to do it, I'm going to give the idea out. If you're looking for it and you can make it work, then good for you. I really wanted to be Kyrie Irving and have Jess be a flat earth.
Oh, I like that idea.
I don't know how to do that, but I really wanted to be Kyrie Irving and have her be a flat earth. That's what I wanted. I also wanted to be Tom Brady in the Lombardi Trophy. We're going with something different. We'll see some photos here over the next few days. But that if you need a costume and you can make that work, then I think you should. Let's get to A.J. Hinch, the manager of the Houston Astros. He was talking about Joe Girardi, and he talked about Girardi being let go by the Yankees. So, Jason, why don't you give us A.J. Hinch number 3?
I appreciated Joe coming by the office and sticking his head in and saying hello and giving me some words of encouragement. You know, he's been through this much more than I have in terms of being in the World Series. He's a real class act, and I've watched a lot of turnover in this sport. And obviously it brings a lot of appreciation for having one of these jobs, for keeping one of these jobs, for all the work that goes in. I don't think anybody can relate to what a manager does other than the other 29 managers or if you've done it before. So in some instances, it's a shame to see so much turnover because of the work that the blood, sweat, tears that's poured into these jobs. And I don't think anybody goes through more than what Joe goes through in New York.
Yeah, really nice words by A.J. Hinch. And I think the managers look at themselves much like the players do here in their fraternity. Really Really kind words of Hinch, and obviously it's a little easier for him to say that because he's got his job and he's in the World Series. But A.J. Hinch certainly recognizing the challenge that Joe Girardi is under and or was under in New York. And how about Derek Jeter, a former player in New York, a former player of Girardi? He talked about Girardi being let go as well. So, Jason, why don't you give us Derek Jeter number one?
I just found this out when I slept in today. So I just found out on the way over. You know, I've played with Joe. He was a coach. He was a manager. He's probably one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but this is a business. You're learning that. Right. I think when you first come up as an athlete or as a professional athlete, when you're younger, you're just playing a game, right? And then the longer you play, you realize this is starting to become a business. So there's, mm-hmm. You know, some things that at times aren't unpopular or are not popular, but, you know, it's part of a business. Mm-hmm.
Derek Jeter talking yesterday, that clip courtesy of ESPN. Derek Jeter would know apparently very well about it being a business and ruffling people's feathers. How about what Derek Jeter is doing in Miami right now? Derek Jeter is cutting all ties with former Marlins, and he's flirting with, in my opinion, a very dangerous line, and I really don't like it. And Jeter's let go of Jack McKeon, who's a former World Series manager with the Marlins. He's let go of Andre Dawson, who's been in a front office type position, who's a Hall of Famer, finished his career, or had part of his career. I think he finished it with the Marlins as well. He's gotten rid now of Jeff Conine, who's known as Mr. Marlin, who's been with the organization for the last 9 years in some kind of management scouting capacity. He played for the Marlins two stints, won two World Series with them. Derek Jeter's cutting ties with all of that. I don't think that's smart.
Is he going to get rid of Marlins man?
Do you like Marlins man?
I think it's funny. Yeah, why not?
Now, Marlins man says he's been offered, you don't even know how much money,
to switch to other teams.
They even said, we'll let you wear an orange jersey if you just have our logo on it. Now, I've tried to get Marlins man on this show twice.
He big-timed you.
Marlins man is big-timing me. And I don't like to tell the stories about the guys that we've tried to get and can't because I don't really like putting it out there who we weren't able to get. But Marlins man has big-timed me twice. Marlins man's name is Lawrence Levy, and I have Lawrence Levy's phone number, and maybe he changed his number. New phone, who dis? I don't know, but Marlins man not giving me the time of day because I have tried to get him on. So Jeter, though, I just don't think it's wise. I just don't think it's wise to go and cut ties with what's made your organization good. Let's get one more on Girardi. What's next for... let's see. Just Michael Kay was on the broadcast for the Yankees. He was on with Mike and Mike. Let's get Michael Kay number one.
I'm not surprised that he's not the manager of the New York Yankees anymore. I'm surprised that the Yankees said, we don't want you to be the manager anymore. In spring training, I told a lot of people I thought that this was going to be it for Joe, that he was pretty much fried. But I thought that he was re-energized during the season when he saw the pipeline of players and the players that he had now and how bright the future was. And although, you know, you had heard rumblings that there was some discord between Joe and the front office, you figured that 91 wins and going to the seventh game of the ALCS probably would have smoothed that over. So when I heard that the Yankees said goodbye, that was surprising.
They said, see ya.
Yeah. Very good. Have you been thinking about that one for the whole...
No.
The whole Michael Kay
clip? No, I'm
just
naturally funny.
That's right, I'm sure. See ya! It is high! Now, that's a good combination, John Sterling and...
John Sterling's horrendous.
You don't like John Sterling?
I think he's funny. Like, I'll listen to it because I think it's funny, but he's not any good.
What's your favorite Sterling home run call?
They're all terrible, I think.
The best one was, oh, McCann-can. Yes, McCann-can. That was the best one. That was the best one. The worst one was, Mark sends a text message.
Yeah.
Oh, you're on the mark, Teixeira. And the Yankees lead 3-1.
I think the last part of that's fine. The text message thing, not a big fan.
All right, last one. Let's get to Tom Brady. Tom Brady, number one, talking about the team's problems in the red zone.
It's a small margin of error, but I think we realize that. I mean, it's a tight space. There's a lot of tight throws. You know, it's just something we got to do a better job of. I mean, scoring those extra 4 points obviously are very critical, and you know we'd love to convert more of them. We just haven't, you know, done as well as we're capable.
Surprised to see that Patriots are 53.5% in the red zone. That's good for 16th in the NFL. Half, you know, and right in the smack dab in the middle of the NFL. For a team we associate with being able to score in high volumes and high number of points, the Patriots just, they're leaving a lot of points on the table there. And Steven Gostkowski's been really good, so they've still converted. But for a team that has Rob Gronkowski, for a team that has Mike Gillisley, for a team that has two scat backs and a team that has Tom Brady, you would expect them to be higher. Maybe this is the week that they get on track. The schedule can get a little softer at times. Oakland's defense is porous. The Jets' defense, they'll see again. So there are opportunities. Miami's defense, if their offense can't do anything, Miami's defense is going to be put on the field for a while. So I think the Patriots get out of this, but you still expect them to be better. Patriots do take on the Chargers Sunday, 10 a.m. We'll have the coverage for you. I actually think the Chargers are going to win. I don't say that lightly. I don't pick against the Patriots often. I feel like you do, that the Patriots just find a way. So if we come in on Monday and the Patriots win by 25, then I'll simply say I wasn't surprised and nothing shocks me. But I think the Chargers have everything in place right now to be able to beat the Patriots this week at least. And Hightower being out is a big thing also. Friday night high school football is coming up next over on 960 The Zone. Mount Mansfield is at Burlington. Jason, you can get rid of the music right here on 101.3 ESPN. We've got Dodgers at Astros. And here we go. We didn't do it earlier in the huddle. We're doing it now. If you've been listening all day, here's your chance. We're going to Bristol on November 17th. Who's coming with us? We're taking a guest. You're going to meet who we meet, hobnob with the stars, hang out in the cafeteria, eat lunch in the cafeteria, sit in on the huddle, sit in on Champlain Valley Game Night. You're going to join the huddle. We're doing it all thanks to our friends over at Kevin Smith Sports. So get in now. Caller number 5. You're going to qualify to get a chance to go with us to Bristol. We're doing it one more week. We're qualifying again next week. Also doing it on Facebook. We put a Facebook post up on Monday. We take 5 qualifiers from Facebook through the week. We also get 5 qualifiers on the air. We're pumped to go to Bristol, and you will be too. So get on in now, 802-655-6672. High school football next on 960. World Series next right here on 101.3 ESPN. Sports Saturday tomorrow. Jake, Kent, and I are in for Jeff and Bernie, so we'll see you tomorrow at 10 a.m. Have a great weekend, everybody. 101.3 ESPN.